President Trump has managed to turn his own criminal trial into a campaign rally. Trump's campaign is actually getting a boost from this trial while the media is having a total meltdown because here they're painting him as this criminal defendant. And they're doing everything they can to demean and dehumanize Trump. And yet he never gets depressed, never gets demoralized, and he's literally turning this into a positive. And then they're getting furious. We've got all the latest on the bogus Trump criminal trial coming up. The Senate has disgracefully dismissed the impeachment charges against Alejandro Mayorkas, the DHS secretary. Not a single witness was called. There was no trial. They literally did not hold an impeachment trial. They voted to dismiss immediately. Mayorkas, I mean, he's responsible for literally millions and millions of illegals coming across the border and lying to Congress repeatedly. And here's what the Senate is saying. They're saying, he's not guilty of anything. This impeachment is not legitimate. It's just a policy disagreement because we just disagree about policy. Mayorkas believes that you should just let every illegal who wants get into the country, every criminal, every terrorist. People are literally getting shot in the streets by these illegals. Terrorists are flooding in through the southern border. Fentanyl flowing nonstop. Mayorkas has repeatedly lied to Congress, but it's just a policy disagreement. So this is just a complete disgrace by Chuck Schumer and by the Senate. That's coming up. President Biden's latest cheat sheet. You cannot make this stuff up. Biden's latest cheat sheet actually tells him when to pause, when to stop and take a breath. We've known this, that he has names and pictures on the cheat sheet. Okay. Biden's entire life is scripted. Biden has a picture on his wall that says, "This is your wife, Jill." Okay. But Monday at an Oval Office meeting with the Iraqi prime minister, Biden was spotted holding a cheat sheet and included instructions in all caps, reminding Biden to pause so that an interpreter could translate his words. I mean, you cannot make it up. How soon until they remind Biden to inhale so that he does not run out of oxygen during these meetings? Maybe the cheat sheet should remind Biden not to stumble when he walks up the stairs. All right, so there's a bombshell report that President Biden was actually tipped off by Iran days in advance of their strike against Israel. This is really, really an incredible report, and there's a lot of evidence to this that the Iranians coordinated the attack with the Biden administration in advance. And why would they do this? In order to sabotage Israel, in order to prevent Israel from retaliating. So, in other words, what this report says, and we're going to bring you the shocking details coming up, they're saying that Iran basically tipped off Biden and said, "Hey, Mr. President," or whoever it is who's in charge over there, Obama or Susan Rice or somebody, and they said, we're going to attack, and here's where we're going to attack, and we want to give you advance notice. Why? So that Israel can then prevent it, so that Israel can basically defend against it and know exactly how to defend against what, you know, where the attack is coming, when the attack is coming, so that Israel can be totally prepared and basically shoot down all the missiles. Why would they do that? Because then Biden, wink, wink, tells Iran, "Okay, listen, I'm going to tell Israel," which is exactly what Biden told Israel. "Look, you won, Iran lost, because they failed. Iran failed," which is, by the way, that's not called a win, but basically Biden colluded with Iran and said, "All right, I'll be able to tell Israel, look, Iran tried to attack, you were able to thwart it, you were able to shoot it down, and now you're even." And that was the whole plan all along. There's a lot of validity. There's a lot of evidence to suggest this is accurate. Now, I need to point out that no matter how you slice it, even if this is true, this is an incredibly miraculous event, an incredibly miraculous success here for Israel. This was Nisim v'Nifloyis. So I don't want to diminish from any, whatever the narrative is, whether Israel was prepared, whether Iran literally set up to fail. You literally have an attack of 300 combined ballistic missiles, cruise missiles, and drones all headed to Israeli airspace. Most of them never even made it there. They're being shot out of the sky, literally over the Jerusalem sky. You have these videos, incredible, I mean, surreal videos of these rockets. I mean, ballistic missiles, dangerous, dangerous. You saw the size of these things in the pictures. These are incredibly dangerous weapons all headed toward Israel, and Israel manages, and of course Jordan even helped, which that itself is an incredible nace, and you know, the United States, the UK, etc. And if there is no room for error whatsoever, they need total precision. I mean, if there's even any kind of glitch or if anything malfunctions, you could have literally rockets and missiles being headed straight to the heart of, I mean, very, very heavily, densely populated areas right in the heart of Israel. So this was a terrifying, terrifying situation no matter how you slice it. Even if Iran coordinated with Biden, you still have missiles that are literally headed toward these densely populated civilian areas. It's terrifying. So, you know, somebody called or left me a message and said that I didn't make it clear enough in my last episode. I made it sound as though, you know, Israel just did this on their own and Israel's incredibly capable and without recognizing the Yad Hashem and without recognizing how miraculous this was. So I want to be very, very clear about that. With that having been said, I do very much believe that it's a strong likelihood that Biden did collude with Iran on this, because think about this, 99% accuracy in shooting down missiles. You have Hezbollah, they shoot rockets, they don't shoot 300, they shoot far fewer, and yet they do hit actual targets on the ground very frequently. Hamas rockets are more accurate. The Iran strike was incredibly, stunningly inaccurate. So it's very easy for me to believe. Now, again, I don't want to negate at all the fact that it was incredibly miraculous and maybe it was not rigged. But I believe that at least it's very possible and plausible that it was rigged in conjunction with Iran and Biden. By the way, and let me just say this to President Biden. Don't, okay? Don't. And when I say don't, that's all I'm going to say. I'm going to be like Biden. Don't, okay? The man, that is as close to a full sentence as you're going to get out of Biden. You know what? Let me, in fact, play you this clip. And I understand why Biden has a one-word strategy, which is not working. It's incredibly embarrassing and humiliating, but it's hard enough for him to remember the strategy when it's only one word. Imagine if it was like a whole sentence. But I want you to listen. This is a clip of Biden on Wednesday saying that he warned the Israelis not to attack Haifa, not to attack the city of Haifa. Listen to this clip.
And I made it clear to Israelis, don't move on Haifa. It's just not, I mean, anyway, I just, look what we did recently when Israel was attacked.
Oh boy, it's just unlistenable, but don't move. I made it clear to the Israelis, don't move on Haifa, don't move on Haifa. And it's like, and David Friedman, former ambassador, he says, listen, I think we need to accommodate Biden's here. Biden demanded that the Israelis not attack Haifa. We should not attack Haifa. He says, you want to attack Hezbollah, you want to attack Iran, not a problem, but do not, whatever you do, don't attack Haifa because Biden said not to attack Haifa. But it's like, don't, you know, again with the don't. And it's just so, so incredibly, incredibly absurd at this point. By the way, a Babylon Bee headline, quote, Biden retaliates against Iran by attaching note to pallet of cash saying, please do not use for terrorism. That's the Babylon Bee headline. It's pretty much almost accurate. A high school student has been suspended for using the term illegal alien in class. A 16-year-old student was suspended from a high school in North Carolina, Central Davidson High School. He used the term illegal alien, and a fellow student found it offensive, and they almost got into a fight over this. The student asked, what happened was the teacher gave an assignment, and in the assignment, the teacher used the term alien. So the student said, which kind of alien do you mean? Do you mean space aliens or do you mean illegal aliens? And a different student took offense. A different student tried instigating a fight with this boy. And the administration then deemed this term to be offensive. The fact that he said illegal aliens, the administration of the school said that's an offensive term. And they proceeded to suspend the student. And if I'm the student, here's my defense. Hey, listen. I'm just using the term that I saw the president of the United States use in the State of the Union address. Biden called them illegal. So if Biden called them illegals, how can you say that I'm being offensive when I'm just following the Democrat, woke, leftist president of the United States? All right. So by the way, Biden has imposed sanctions on Iran. Finally, Biden has imposed sanctions on Iran. Look at the length Iran needed to go to in order to finally, the Hamas terror attack, right? Biden did not impose sanctions. Remember, he lifted all the sanctions. That's what created all this mess in the first place. The Iran kills U.S. soldiers on military bases. No sanctions. Iran repeatedly attacks ships in the Red Sea, disrupts global commerce. No sanctions imposed. It took this major massive airstrike for Biden to finally impose sanctions. And these are the same sanctions that Trump imposed and that Biden reversed as soon as he took office. And even the sanctions that they have now restored are pitifully weak and just a token gesture as usual. Meanwhile, the United Nations, the UN, is concerned about Iran's nuclear facilities, but it's not what you think. The UN, they're not concerned about Iran building a nuclear weapon, which they've essentially already done. The UN is worried that Israel will damage Iran's nuclear facilities and Iran's nuclear weapons programs. You can't make it up. The UN says that they're worried about Israel retaliating by actually attacking a nuclear facility in Iran. Now, how is that a problem? That's Israel doing the UN's job for them, okay? What the UN should be concerned, they should be concerned that Israel maybe will not attack Iran's nuclear facilities. I mean, their whole job is to stop Iran. We'll read you some of those details coming up. Congress is still trying to send money to Israel, and yet unsuccessfully, dysfunctional Congress. Here we are 6 months later. By the way, Marjorie Taylor Greene still threatening to ouster Speaker Mike Johnson, but it does not seem like there's going to be enough backing amongst Republicans or Democrats to vacate Mike Johnson. But they are making his life very, very difficult. Meanwhile, not one penny, not one extra penny has been sent to Israel since the terror attack, in addition to the funding that Israel gets from America anyway. The Republicans cannot agree. Here's what's happening. There are some Republicans who say a standalone. It seems that virtually all Republicans support sending funding to Israel, but some of them say, let's include it with a Ukraine funding package and let's just lump it all together. And others say, no, let's send a standalone package. We're not giving the Democrats the Ukraine funding that they want unless we force them to deal with the border. So that's the same fight that we've been seeing all along. And the truth is, even if they do pass a standalone, if they don't pass Ukraine, they're not going to get enough support from the Democrats. It could pass the House, but it can't pass the Senate. So we have the same, everyone's politicizing this, just as usual. All sides are politicizing this, trying to use this to serve their own agenda. You should pass any package, pass a standalone package, pass a package with Ukraine, if that's the best you can do. I don't care at this point because they've got to send money to Israel. It's simply the right thing to do. But as usual, they're all politicizing this. They know that Israel funding is so crucial that every side is trying to use it as leverage to get what they want. We've got another poll that we'll tell you about coming up, which shows Trump ahead in now five key swing states. We keep seeing this trend over and over again. Biden is going to need to forgive a lot of student loans in order to catch up with Trump, in order to bribe voters to vote for him. All right. So as I said, the Senate, they began the impeachment trial and ended, closed out, adjourned the impeachment trial of Alejandro Mayorkas. All in one day. It's egregious. The Democrats made a total mockery of the process. And here's the story. All right, I want to get to Trump, and I'll explain afterwards why it is. This is not a policy dispute. This is so much more than a policy. The Democrats are saying, well, you know, you just disagree with Mayorkas about policy. He keeps lying to Congress, and he's let 7.5 million illegals in under his watch and keeps saying, oh, the border's secure, the border's secure. Nobody's crossing the border. And fentanyl and all sorts of diseases and human trafficking and just all sorts of things, terrorists, Chinese nationals. I mean, every nightmare scenario you can imagine about the border, it's worse than anything you could have come up with on our own. And Mayorkas just keeps saying, I don't know what everybody's talking about. The border's secure. Nobody's getting across the border. Lying. Just literally lying. So we'll get that's just a policy thing. We just disagree about policy. He's doing his job. He's doing his job. His job is to sit there and let terrorists and criminals and MS-13 gang members and drugs and fentanyl just cross the border and totally not even attempt to stop them. So that we'll get to in a moment. But I do have to get to Trump and the Trump criminal trial. Did you see that on Tuesday, after the proceedings, the court proceedings ended, Trump actually went and he visited that bodega in Harlem where the clerk, Jose Alba, a couple of years ago, shot and killed an attacker in the store in self-defense, in the bodega. And then he was indicted. Then he was literally indicted by Alvin Bragg before Bragg, under enormous pressure, Bragg decided to renege and drop those charges. But this man, remember, we told you, we were all on top of this story, where this bodega clerk in Harlem, literally a man came in attacking him. I mean, literally, just, it's on camera, okay? This man with this vicious, high on drugs, career criminal, attacked this man, Jose Alba, and in self-defense, Jose Alba managed to kill him. I believe I don't remember if it was with a knife or with a gun, but either way, he managed to kill this. And then he was prosecuted by Alvin Bragg. Alvin Bragg, you have these vicious criminals walking the streets of New York City. Bragg does nothing to stop them. He literally lets them off on misdemeanor charges. And who does he go after? He goes after Trump, and he goes after this poor store clerk who literally killed a man in self-defense. So how great is it that Trump, in order to show up Bragg, goes from the courthouse and decides to basically have sort of a mini campaign rally at this bodega? And you know what's incredible? I was listening to CNN, and CNN was whining about this. And CNN said, Trump is using this trial to get publicity. I mean, number one, it's beyond comprehension. That's CNN literally said he's using this trial as a way to get publicity. I mean, they indicted him. He figured out a way. They're indicting him for one reason. They want to literally just completely dehumanize him and just turn him into this criminal defendant who they label a monster. That's all they're trying to do with Trump is just crush him. And the more they do it, the more galvanized he gets, the more galvanized his supporters get. That's what's incredible is they keep like hitting the beast, right? Hoping to try to break him down. And all it's doing is making him stronger. But what's incredible is that like CNN is angry because Trump outfoxed them. He flipped the script. He said, "Oh, you know what? I'm gonna use this as a PR opportunity to try to make Alvin Bragg look silly and to try to build himself up," which is exactly what he did. And it's another, the other part of this court case is they're trying, the timing is clearly designed to keep Trump off the campaign trail while Biden is off campaigning. But what's incredible is, you know, the media, they are so suffering so much from Trump derangement. Their Trump derangement syndrome runs so deep. Think about this, because I'm listening to the media, right? And it's like these charges are so bogus. And Hillary Clinton, she committed the exact same crime, so to speak, crime as Trump here with reporting the expenditures as legal expenses when it was really campaign expenses. Trump did not do that. Nothing of the sort, because they were legal expenses for Trump. But Hillary did the exact same thing. Incredibly, we'll get to that in a moment. But CNN, MSNBC, they're treating this like it's a real criminal trial. They're acting as though like Trump is Bernie Madoff. What Trump is no different than Alexei Navalny in Russia. That's what Trump is going through right now. It's Alexei Navalny is that he ticked off the wrong people. He has angered the wrong people. He's angered the Democrats. He's angered the establishment, even some Republicans. They view him as this massive existential threat to humanity because he actually wants to drain the swamp. He actually wants to fix a broken government and, finally reverse all these awful socialist policies. So, and he wants to come in and disrupt the system. That's why even Republicans dislike him. So what are they doing? He's a political dissident. They're putting him on trial, throwing all these charges against him, these bogus manufactured criminal charges, trying to either throw him in jail or make him penniless, or at the very least, they're trying to make everyone else terrified. Because what they're doing to Trump, they have punished the man, abused him so much. And yeah, he somehow can manage to take it and keep on going. But what do you think is going to happen in November? If the Democrats rig the election, and you know they will, if the Democrats cheat, and you know they will, or what's going to happen in the future when people try to actually prevent the woke left from taking over the establishment, open borders, and Iran, and all of that, you know, Republican or whatever, right? What's going to happen? And you say, well, we got to speak out. We got to fight, okay? The Democrats cheated. Who's going to say, get up and say, well, the Democrats cheated? You say the Democrats cheated? You're going to have all sorts of indictments thrown at you. They're going to make you penniless. They're going to force you to spend millions in legal fees that most people, unlike Trump, do not have. So what's going to happen? People are going to be terrified. Oh, look how Trump got abused. I don't want to get that abuse. I'm just going to keep quiet. Okay, so that's what they're doing, is they're silencing anybody who says, you know what, I'm going to do what Trump did. I'm going to fight back. I'm going to call out when the Democrats cheat and when the Democrats, rig the election so that the guy who lost really won and used mail-in ballots and voter fraud and everything else. People are going to be terrified to utter a word about it, and that is really their goal. So it's Alexei Navalny over here in Russia right now. You think anybody else wants to go up against Putin after seeing the fate of Alexei Navalny? But what's incredible is Hillary broke the same law as Trump. Hillary and the DNC were fined. They were fined in 2022 a combined $108,000 because in 2016 Hillary's campaign paid for the Steele dossier through that law firm. And then instead of labeling it a campaign expense, they labeled it a legal expense. And by the way, and that was opposition research. Remember, I mean, that was bogus opposition research. But what they were trying to do was, and successfully, I should add, they were trying to prompt an FBI investigation into Trump, which ultimately led to Trump's impeachment. It was a bogus, fake, phony dossier with these false allegations about Trump colluding with Russia. Well, Hillary paid for that. And she covered it up because she called it a legal expense. And that was real. That was a real campaign expense. What Trump did was, you know, without getting into all the details of what Trump did, but he literally, a lawyer made a payment, and then that payment benefited Trump in all sorts of ways not related to the campaign. So it wasn't a campaign expense, and it wasn't paid by Trump. It was paid by Michael Cohen. And then Trump, after the campaign was over, Trump reimbursed Michael Cohen for that money. Or made it included in other legal fees and called it a legal expense. That's what it was. Any human being would call it. Any human being would call what Trump did a legal expense, paying a lawyer who laid out money to pay to make payments that benefited you in a million ways, not just his campaign. With Hillary, it was literally purely for campaign purposes. The Steele dossier was for one reason. It was to try to take down her political opponent, Trump. Now, even if, and of course, Hillary's not getting indicted, but at most, even if you would, so Hillary, the DNC was charged, was fined $100,000, and the Hillary's campaign was charged $8,000, literally for this exact same, crime, which at most is, you know, a violation, which at most is a misdemeanor. Nobody has ever, as far as I can tell, nobody has ever been charged with felony over any sort of campaign finance violation. But unless your name is Trump. If your name is Trump, then they slap you with 34 bogus felony indictments. It's literally surreal. And look, I'm not saying that Trump is going to be acquitted. I mean, the media, they're all giddy. They're literally, like, they are so excited. They're salivating. Like, in their mind, Trump has already been convicted. They don't realize it's actually going to be a trial, and all it takes is a couple of jurors who decide that, you know, who see right through these bogus charges. But I'm not saying that Trump is going to be acquitted. I want to be very clear here. What I'm saying is that these charges are completely fabricated. But if he does get convicted, it's not because the charges have merit. That is my point. Is that my point is in New York City jury, they're having a lot of trouble here finding jurors who are unbiased, as you can imagine, because, you know, usually they would try to find jurors who have never even heard of the defendant. Obviously, in this situation, that's not even an option. So now it's just a question of trying to figure out who's biased and who's not. And how are you going to figure that out? I mean, who doesn't have an opinion about Trump in one way or the other? But a New York City jury is capable of doing anything. That's my point, is that they may convict him, but if they convict him, it's because they're biased against him. It's not because the case has merit. Look, OJ. I mean, if OJ Simpson could be acquitted, then Trump could, you know, be convicted. All right. So there are reports in the Trump trial that Judge Mershon, who, by the way, who cannot stand Trump. I mean, the Judge Mershon clearly despises Trump, which is not very good. But there are reports that the judge actually disqualified Orthodox Jews from Jews from being on the jury. And his official reason is because of Shabbos. Now, there is going to be an issue with Yom Tov and with Pesach, although Trump has actually a couple of frum lawyers, which is pretty fascinating. So it's not clear to me if they're going to adjourn for Yom Tov or, you know, those aren't his main, they're not his main lawyer. So, you know, it could be that, you know, they can manage a couple of days without them. But, you know, you accommodate a juror if they have religious issues. That's a very, very common practice. And yet the judge, according to reports, many reports, the judge said, no, if you're an Orthodox Jew, then you are disqualified for being a juror. Supposedly not even because of Pesach, but because of Shabbos. He's saying that they're not going to be able to accommodate the schedule of Shabbos. Now, obviously, we're in spring right now, and Shabbos is getting later and later, but Shabbos begins long after a court would adjourn on a Friday afternoon, or at least you have a couple of hours. So that reason is bogus. That reason is not accurate. Is not true. That's simply false. And why would the judge be disqualifying from Jews from being jurors? Well, it's obvious because everybody knows that the from Jews predominantly in New York City, they are not going to have a hard time finding anti-Trump voters, right? Obviously, a lot of Democrats in New York City and a lot of people who don't like Trump. But the from Jews are the main exception, where you have a large contingent of Trump supporters in the from Jewish population in New York City. So clearly that's what the judge is trying to do there. He's trying to disqualify jurors who would be sympathetic to Trump. Meanwhile, they did disqualify a couple of jurors because they felt that they may be biased against Trump. For example, Fascinating. You know, one juror tweeted, lock him up, talking about Trump. And Judge Mershon, thankfully, was so generous that he allowed the defense to strike that juror who literally tweeted, lock him up. Now, there was another juror. There was one juror who joined a Biden election victory parade who was not disqualified from the jury. And the judge said, because the juror just said, oh, well, I thought that it was a celebration of essential workers. I didn't realize that it was an election victory parade for Biden. So the judge said, all right, well, that's a legitimate reason, so she can stay. Another juror, listen to this, who tweeted, lock him up. Here's what happened. First, he tweeted, good news, !! Trump lost his court battle on his unlawful travel ban. This is obviously a few years ago. And the judge said, oh, well, that line itself was not a problem. But then the juror later said in the same tweet, get him out and lock him up. So he was thrilled, this juror, that Trump lost his court battle on his unlawful travel ban. And he called that good news. But that would not have disqualified him. But then he said, lock him up. So that juror, at least the judge agreed, was biased. Now, like I said, Trump visited this bodega. So we told you about that. What's amazing is he met with Ma'ar Ahmed, the co-owner of the bodega. Remember, Jose Alba was the clerk who killed that attacker in self-defense. But then Ma'ar Ahmed, the co-owner of the store, he said that he has never voted in his life. I assume he's legal. I don't know. But he said he's never voted in his life. But he said this is the first time he's ever going to vote, and he's going to vote for Trump. He said, quote, I've never voted because I've been working, but this time I will. I guess he works. I mean, I think the polls are open in New York City from like 6 a.m. to 9 p.m., so he must work a lot of hours. But he says, we need Donald Trump back in the White House because he's a strong guy. And what's incredible is that, when Trump visited this bodega, there was a huge crowd. You know, Trump announced that he was going to do this, and there was a huge crowd outside of the bodega. And these are people from Harlem and from Spanish Harlem. These are minorities, okay? These are the people who supposedly are supposed to dislike Trump, and supposedly Trump is a racist against these people. You'd be amazed how many blacks and Hispanics are enamored with Trump and recognize. They realize that this country is falling apart. I mean, the people in the low-income areas, sometimes they get hit the hardest more than anybody because of all the crime. And they understand. These are intelligent people. They understand that Biden is the reason for all the crime and that Trump is going to do something to stop it. So they get it. You know, not all of them, but many of them. And, you know, certainly the ones who are in the country legally, they seem to love Trump. And they were literally chanting, four more years. By the way, as of Wednesday morning, there were 7 jurors selected, but they're saying it's going to still take another few days. The initial wave of 96, they have like hundreds of jurors to choose from. They brought in 96, and then the judge asked if they could be impartial, and 50 of them raised their hands saying that they could not be impartial, and the judge just excused them right away, said, all right, you guys are out, and that whittled it down to something around 40, and then there have been a bunch more that have been rejected since then. And then, like we said, 7 were chosen as of Wednesday morning. By the way, one female prospective juror, they asked her if she knows President Trump. She said something very bizarre. She said, quote, obviously, I know about President Trump because I'm a female. And the lawyer asked her, Trump's defense lawyer said, well, like, what do you mean by that? And she said, I know that there have been opinions on how he does not treat females correctly. I honestly don't know the story, so I don't have a view on it. And I do believe that that juror was disqualified. But it just goes to show you, you know, some of the bizarre things that people hear. And again, don't underestimate the people who only get their news from listening to either podcasts, leftist podcasts, or NPR. By the way, NPR is in a whole heap of trouble. A lot of controversy swirling around NPR, which is publicly funded. We're paying. Our tax dollars are paying for woke leftist NPR, which is so incredibly biased. But that's going to have to wait for a different day because we just have way too much going on. But, you know, these people get brainwashed, whether they read the New York Times, whether they just, you know, watch the news on television, or whether they just listen to music and listen to, you know, whichever silly podcast they listen to telling them how evil Trump is and how much he hates minorities and supposedly hates women. All right, the House passed a resolution declaring that the chant "From the River to the Sea, Palestine will be free" is anti-Semitic. So this resolution passed. And now, obviously, it doesn't really make any practical difference, but it's an important statement. It passed the House overwhelmingly. However, 44 House members voted against this resolution, and one of them was a Republican. No surprise there. That was Thomas Massie, who has a long history, a long track record of anti-Semitic sentiments, but it was 44 Democrats, 43 voted against and one voted present, which is the same thing. Present, just such a silly vote, just makes no sense. But what's amazing is that literally this is this passed 377 to 44 to 1. 44 members voted against it. 43 of them were radical leftist Democrats, okay? So 44 Democrats refused to say it's anti-Semitic. This chant, the chant says that they want to wipe Israel off the map, okay? From the river to the sea is, you know, you almost can't be any more anti-Semitic than that. All right, so let's talk about Iran and about Israel. And Israel, as of the time that I'm recording this, late Wednesday evening, still has not retaliated. There are talks that there are reports that Israel is has delayed its response against Iran. And look, several callers made the following point. You know, the question is, should Israel retaliate? Should Israel not retaliate? And, you know, callers made the point that, listen, it's one thing for Israel to send a message to Iran, but here's the question, okay? If you escalate this thing, and if Israel retaliates, and then if that kind of incites Iran to then respond even more, and then there's a, you know, it escalates the situation, and it escalates the conflict, it increases the conflict and increases the fighting, then that could obviously be very dangerous. In other words, the callers, multiple callers kind of made this point that, listen, you know, is it a good idea for Israel to respond if that could potentially trigger then further attacks by Iran? Would it be better for Israel to just leave things alone right now, leave it status quo? That was the question. So I want to make it very, very clear here. To me, there's no question in the world that we need to do whatever's going to keep Gideon the safest and keep Israel safest and keep Jews to make sure that Jews are safe and Jews are protected. That's a given. I know there's not a discussion. There's nothing to discuss. The question is, and this is the part that I don't know if anybody has the answer to. I certainly do not, and it's an impossible decision. Is I don't know which way is safer. To me, clearly it can go in both directions because on the one hand, you say, well, listen, right now things are quiet. Iran kind of, they did their token attack. And again, we'll get into whether or not Iran wanted it to fail. I believe Iran wanted it to fail, but I am open to the other possibility that Iran wanted it to succeed. And, you know, the Israelis, Baruch Hashem, you know, were able to ward it off and defend against it. I'm open to both. I'm just going to bring you these kind of chilling, shocking details, which I believe point to the fact that Iran, you know, wanted this to fail because it was in their best interest. But either way, now the question is, if Israel retaliates, okay, if it's a strong response, then Iran might say, we've got to stop. I mean, this is going to be very detrimental. Israel can overpower us. And Iran at that point will just give up and just leave it alone at that point and call it even, cut their losses. On the flip side, if Israel does nothing, Iran might say, all right, you know what? We attacked. Israel didn't do anything. We're gonna attack some more. That could be how it plays out. Or you could tell me now you say, no, that's not what's going to happen. If Israel does nothing, Iran's definitely not going to attack anymore. I don't know. Remember, we've seen how Iran responds to Biden versus Trump. Iran responds to strength, not weakness. Okay. Again, I'm just going here just in the natural order of things. You know, I believe that Iran is cowardly. And I believe that the more you show them strength, the less likely they are to respond. However, I understand the other option. The other option would be that, no, listen, right now, Iran, they have gotten their attack in. So, you know, their ego is like, is strong enough that they say, oh, you know what? Stalemate. Okay, we attacked. Israel defended. We tried. This was a strong attack. We did what we could. And see that Israel's not retaliating. So we're just going to leave it alone because Iran is cowardly. If Israel responds, then they're kind of defying Iran and challenging and daring Iran to respond. So I hear both sides here. I don't know. Obviously, to me, there's no question you do whatever's going to make it most likely for Iran not to attack. I just don't know which way that goes. Meanwhile, all right, so a caller said, we've been saying that Iran, they warned Biden, they warned Israel, they wanted this to fail. A caller said, well, what about John Kirby? John Kirby said this was not theater. Iran was trying to do damage. So John Kirby contradicted what I said. And to me, look, that means nothing to me because John Kirby, look, we've seen him lie many times. But he's going to say that. See, John Kirby, it's in the Biden administration's best interest to make it seem like Iran really wanted this attack to succeed. They wanted to do damage, and the United States, Israel, the UK were able to protect against this terribly dangerous attack. Okay, it doesn't make the United States look good if Iran is cowardly, right? And if Iran says, listen, we don't want to really do anything. We don't want to do damage. That doesn't help the United States for Iran to be weak. Okay, I want Iran to be weak. We want Iran to be weak and cowardly. But you know, and Iran needed this thing to look real. Okay, either way, they needed to look real. So I don't know. But to me, Kirby saying it doesn't mean very much because Kirby wants it to look like, oh yeah, Iran, they tried, they gave it their best shot, but we're just too strong for them. That's much more beneficial to the United States, I believe, to the United States' posture. But this bombshell story, and this really comes from the Jerusalem Post, but we're going to read you here from the Middle East Media Research Institute, an op-ed by Yigal Carmon. But the Jerusalem Post is reporting that Biden had prior knowledge of Iran's attack against Israel, but not only had prior knowledge, but actually gave them the green light, that Biden actually signed off on it. And according to Reuters, Iran informed Turkey in advance of its attack against Israel and gave details. And then, you know, a combination of Reuters and the Jerusalem Post say that Biden conveyed to Iran that, you know what, you can do this. Go ahead with your attack, but it has to be within certain limits. But what's more chilling is that they did this in order to sabotage Israel. And this makes perfect sense. This is completely consistent with everything that Biden has done. So let me read you here some excerpts from Yigal Carmon in this op-ed. And it's called Memory, Middle East Media Research Institute, among other places. Quote, in the days before the attack, America had exchanges with Iran. Early warnings had been coming from America for a week, including the Wall Street Journal and Bloomberg. America coordinated the attack with Iran so that nobody would be physically injured or killed. This was thanks to the highly skilled American, Israeli, British, and Jordanian air defenses. The Americans began the pressure on Israel not to react even before the attack took place. CENTCOM's commander, right, that Central Command's commander, General Michael Kurilla, went to Israel April 13th, pressured for prior coordination with the United States of any action by Israel. Now President Biden said it himself. He said, you were not hurt. They failed. Do not do anything. Do not escalate because you'll be dragging us into a war. We protected you. Nobody was hurt. The answer will be diplomatic. So I'm going to interject here for a second. You know, Naftali Bennett put out a tweet, quote, when a bully tries to hit you 350 times and only succeeds 7 times, you have not won. Okay, that's not called winning. So that's the egregious part, is it really did play out this way. It makes so much sense, this narrative here, because Biden literally said to Israel just that. He said, listen, you won. Okay, you won. That's not a win. They tried to hit you 350 times, but oh, by the way, you managed to stifle it. Back to the op-ed, quote, indeed no one was hurt, but Israel's deterrence was struck down by the United States' pre-coordination with Iran. Israel's deterrence was sold out to save Iran's deterrence. When the ballistic missiles that can reach Tel Aviv from Iran in 12 minutes were delayed, I told my friends, this is again Yigal Carmon, it was probably in order to stop, for refreshments along the way, and that the Americans were going to tell us not to react. Al Jazeera reported that drones spotted over Aqaba in southern Jordan were continuing on their way to Eilat. Anyone who knows the area knows drones anywhere in Aqaba could reach the almost adjacent Eilat in 2 minutes, yet there were no drone bombings in Eilat. This coordination with Iran that guarantees no casualties, no injuries, was made over Israel's head. Israel's Air Force did a great job. They had full information about the missiles that were coming. Israel got the information from the Americans, who got the information about the what, where, and when of the airstrikes from the Iranians, enabling an unfathomable 99% missile defense rate. The Air Force and air defense, together with the other countries, did their best, but Israel's deterrence was lost. To retrieve would be a painful process because, as the Iranians are threatening, the next attack will not be pre-coordinated. So look, again, some people are telling me, listen, 99%, it was an incredible nace, nisim and aflois, and Iran and Israel had no, coordination, no advance warning. Okay, that's possible. I'm not saying not, but I'm just saying I believe that this is also a possibility. Oh, so much else to get to here, but we're really out of time. Biden student loan forgiveness, which is illegal, by the way, it's now going to cost us $500 billion, $550 billion. How disgraceful. Biden, I understand he's trying to bribe these voters because that's all he's got. He's desperate. $550 billion, according to a new report, is going to cost taxpayers. I mean, it's unfathomable to bribe voters, and many of them are rich, by the way. The predominant, the illegal student loan forgiveness will predominantly impact households earning over $300,000, okay? So when Biden tells you he's targeting low-income people, that is a lie. Not that that would be any better. All right, so I guess finally so much else, but we're going to have to, all right, well, quickly this poll, Echelon Insights, this new poll, and we've seen so many polls at this point, they all say the same thing. So it's just fascinating. I mean, Trump here has this very, very healthy lead, and it's just been consistent. And the more they indict, the longer this trial goes, I suspect it'll get even bigger. But you got Arizona, Georgia, Michigan, Nevada, and Pennsylvania. Trump with a healthy lead in all of those states, according to this new poll. Five of six key swing states, and Wisconsin, Biden has a very, it's neck and neck. Biden has a 1-point lead. Arizona, Trump leads by 6. Georgia, Trump leads by 10. Michigan, Trump leads by 6. Nevada, Trump leads by 7. Pennsylvania, Trump leads by 4 percentage points. And the poll found swing state voters blame Biden for surging costs and the invasion at the southern border. 59% blame Biden for the invasion. 51% blame Biden for inflation. 73% of swing voters disapprove of Biden's job performance. Pretty fascinating. Like I said, the funding bills for Israel, we're going to keep an eye on that. But there was one standalone bill that went to the Senate that the Democrats voted down. So, you know, they're all a bunch of hypocrites when it comes to funding Israel. Like I said, the Iranian nuclear facilities, they are a potential target if Israel does decide to retaliate. And the UN and UN inspection team and the IAEA, Rafal Grossi, he's saying, I'm worried about this. I'm worried that Israel might retaliate by attacking Iran's nuclear facilities. Hello, that would be a good thing. They'd be doing your job for you. Okay, you should thank them. You should be worried that they're not going to do that. But finally, I just got to mention Mayorkas over here because it's just a disgrace. Number one, the Senate never, ever, ever before agreed to basically dismiss a motion, dismiss articles of impeachment. They literally, this man was impeached by the House, and the Senate says, we don't care. We're ignoring the impeachment. We're not going to hold a trial. It's disgraceful. It's totally disgraceful, and it's a total abdication of their constitutional duties. But here's the thing, okay? The notion that somehow Mayorkas is a policy dispute, okay? They're saying, well, listen, he's the DHS secretary, okay? He can enforce the border however he wants. He's not committing a crime, a high crime misdemeanor. It's a policy dispute. They have a different policy. They have an open borders policy. Let me explain to you why that it's just a completely bogus argument, okay? That argument is just completely disingenuous, and it's completely baseless. And here's why. Because there are a lot of things that technically are within the purview of a certain official, like the president, for example, and it's still impeachment, right? It's still impeachable. Let me give you an example. Let's say Biden decided, or any president, let's say Trump decided to pardon every single federal criminal. He could do that. The president has the legal power to pardon every single criminal in America. So there would be nothing illegal about that, right? Clearly, it would be legal. It would be legal. He could pardon every single, just release every single criminal, every single traitor, every single person who's guilty of espionage or whatever. The president has the legal right to do that. There would be no illegality, no crime in releasing every single criminal out of federal prison. Would that be a high crime and misdemeanor? Would it be an impeachable offense? Of course. Of course it would be. It would be treasonous. It would be the worst crime in history committed by anybody for the president to just let out thousands, tens of thousands. Again, anybody in a federal prison, anybody in a federal penitentiary. It's legal. He has the right to do it. It's a policy dispute. It's just a policy dispute. The president has a different policy. He believes that you should release. He's allowed to pardon, commute sentences. They do that all the time with somebody who deserves it or somebody they believe deserves it. Sometimes they abuse it. But, you know, they can't just go and just do it just indiscriminately. Everybody, let's just, hey, pardon, you know, free for all. Pardon all the vicious, horrible criminals guilty of all sorts of incredibly terrible crimes. So it's a policy dispute. Just because it's within his purview and he legally has the constitutional ability to do it does not make it not an impeachable offense. Does not make it a policy dispute. Okay, same thing if, let's say, the president decided to, and Biden did this with the classified documents, but let's say the president decided to just declassify every single classified secret in the United States, every single piece of classified information, nuclear secrets, nuclear facilities, military secrets. I mean, you name it, all the military plans, everything, strategy. The president has access. The president has the right to declassify every single piece of classified information, every top secret information, everything that the United States has, every military secret, you name it. And the president has the legal right, the jurisdiction to declassify it all and to give it away to the Russians and China and North Korea and everybody. Let's say the president did that. Obviously, he'd be a traitor. Obviously, he'd be put before the firing squad. I mean, it's unthinkable, right? It's beyond a high crime and misdemeanor. I mean, it's totally impeachable. Now why? It's just a policy dispute. Okay, so the answer is, if you do something that you technically have the right to do, but you're completely betraying your country and you're doing something which is harmful to the country. Okay, there's not always a black and white definition to it. Okay, it doesn't matter how you define it. You look at millions and millions of illegals coming across, terrorists coming across. Fentanyl, the drugs. I mean, thousands and thousands of people have been killed by illegals coming across the border, and not to mention all the billions it's costing us in tax dollars. And Mayorkas is to blame. And why is he just lies to Congress? By the way, he lies to Congress with a straight face. Is he a sociopath? I don't think so. He just looks at us as being vermin. It's like, he can lie. Oh, yeah, well, I'm doing my thing. I think it's good for the Democrats. And, they're going to ask me, oh, the border's secure. The way he's able to do that and lie and do it so callously is because we're just all vermin. We're just all peons. We're just all, just the little people. So he doesn't even have to answer to us. It's just we're a nuisance to him. But just because that's not a policy. The other Democrats are saying it's a policy dispute because he's allowed to do it. No, he's not. You're not allowed to destroy. He's destroying a country with an invasion of millions of people that the country cannot sustain. And they're doing it only for political purposes because it gets more money to the Democrat states and more congressional seats and more votes for more Democrat votes, period. Okay, you cannot destroy the country. That is not a policy dispute. That is a total dereliction of duty. That's going to do it for today, and we will see you next time.